From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. An opioid crisis, a heroin crisis, has swept across this country. Ohio has been among the hardest hit states. Cincinnati, on the Ohio River, across from Kentucky, has been slammed. This summer, the Cincinnati Inquirer sent out a huge team of journalists for 1 week to bear witness. The report they assembled is beyond shocking. Its writers are with us. This hour on Point, 7 days of heroin. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you know this reality? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. 60 journalists in the field in Greater Cincinnati, 7 days monitoring so much, finding more than you wanted to know was out there, but it's there and we need to know. Here's just one piece. They wrote this up and wrote it up beautifully, but there's video, there's audio as well. Here's a 911 call from Monday, July 10th, this summer, the first day of a week-long heroin reporting project from the Cincinnati Inquirer. A warning, this may be upsetting to some listeners.
Hello?
Hello, Cincinnati 911.
Yes, please, sir. My brother and his friend overdosed.
Where's
in
it
my car. I'm running the rapid room corner. What's going on?
And how many people have overdosed there? Are they breathing?
But what if they're blue?
Okay, we're sending the paramedics, okay?
But what if they're blue? This is just day one of the big series, headline, 7 days of heroin. This is what an epidemic looks like. Joining us now from Cincinnati is Terry DeMeo, heroin reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer, co-writer of this epic inquiry. Terry DeMeo, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Also with us from Cincinnati is Dan Horn, Hamilton County reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer, Terry's co-writer on 7 days of heroin. Dan Horn, thank you as well. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
And I should say to all of our listeners, you can link to the whole story at our website, onpointradio.org. You may think you can imagine what this story is like, assembled by all these journalists over one solid week of very dense, intense reporting. But you don't know until you read it. This is amazingly well done, amazingly affecting. Terry DeMeo, this was your beat before you came upon the idea of going at this for one hard, deep week. Why did you turn to this technique for looking at Cincinnati's problem, Terry?
Well, this is something that I see every day. I'm in touch with families of people who use heroin, parents of people who have lost their children to overdose, certainly law enforcement officials and paramedics, and some active users in our communities. And, you know, I've been covering this for about 4 years, with 2 years being full-time. Written various aspects as well as, you know, accountability pieces for government and using national experts. But I thought what I'm seeing every day, what these people are going through every day, affects everyone in our communities. And that's where the idea of 7 days of heroin came up.
Dan, the way you wrote this is not like a standard narrative. It's essentially a series of vignettes. They are powerful vignettes. They are affecting it at a soul-deep level as they accumulate over 7 days. How did you come up with this way of just laying out one snapshot after another, after another, after another, Dan?
Right. We talked about that quite a bit. And I think one of the things we realized early on was that, you know, this is a problem that we've obviously been covering very aggressively for a long time. But I think outside of Terry, who is living it every day, a lot of people in the newsroom and a lot of people in the community maybe weren't seeing this problem that was right before their eyes because it had become so familiar. It becomes so routine. These stories appear all the time. People hear about them all the time. But it had become normalized somehow. And I think our hope here was that by taking this approach and just putting these spare moments in time, organized by day, by hour, and putting them out there so people could see them unfold as they did, that it would give people maybe a better appreciation for what's happening right before their eyes, even though they're not necessarily seeing it like they once did.
7 days of heroin and writing this not just for Cincinnati proper, but for Greater Cincinnati, even over the Ohio River into Kentucky. Here's a little bit from the audio of the series. Of course, there's text, and it is amazing. But audio and video as well. Early July, when they were doing this, during these 7 days, Thomas Burke died of a heroin overdose in his home in Newport, Kentucky, not far from Cincinnati. Here's a recording of the 911 call his friend made after he found Burke on the floor.
I just walked in from my buddy. He's been answering the phone, and I believe he's OD, and I think he's dead.
Okay, can you tell me for sure if he has a pulse or a heartbeat?
He's cold.
Cincinnati Inquirer went to his mother in Newport, Kentucky, 10-minute drive from Cincinnati. Burke had been drug-free for about a year before relapsing. His mom talked with reporters about what it felt like to get the call her son had died.
It felt like somebody just blasted me in the chest with a shotgun. That's what it really felt like. I guess they see it so much, they just look at it like, whatever. That corner said, I deal with this every day. And they kept, well, we deal with this every day. I said, yeah, well, I don't deal with this every day. I don't got to deal with every day and bury my child. Every day my child's dead. I don't deal with that every day. Well, how would you feel if you went home your child was dead?
The coroners around Cincinnati dealing with it every day. And here was that mother recalling what it was like for the Inquirer to see her son's body, Thomas Burke, after he had died of that heroin overdose.
Just to see your child like looking like that, and that had been doing good so long. I remember just laying on his chest and asking, why did you do this? Why would you do this, Tom Dum? And I didn't want to let him go, and I didn't care how he looked. I just wanted to bring him home.
And it's story after story after story. There's one that you tell here about a couple who lost, I think, two of their sons.
Right.
And I wonder if you could read a little bit for us about that. This is an aging couple. They've lost two sons. They'd like to have a funeral for them, a special kind of funeral. But that is an event that they may never see. Could you read a little bit for us, Terry or Dan there?
Sure.
Set the scene.
This is Janie Fox, and we met up with her just during the course of the week. She had lost her sons in the past year, so they did not die this week. But she's someone who was known in the community and has talked about this from time to time. And so we met with her, and this is sitting in her kitchen. She keeps their ashes in two black shoebox-sized containers on a shelf in her family room. A candle and photos of the boys stand nearby on the shelf. But Janie Fox wants to do better for them. She wants to have a memorial service where people could remember her boys as they were before heroin turned their lives to ash. She wants to release white doves and find a nice place to spread their remains. Fox is 70, though, and her husband is sick with cancer. They have bills, more money going out than coming in. So Fox sits at her kitchen table, drinking coffee reheated from this morning, planning a funeral she may never see.
A funeral that she may never be able to pull off for those sons. And Terry, there's a scene in the NKY Med Clinic in Covington. I wonder if you could just read some of that about the number of people, 1,200 people coming in every day for methadone, and just watching the parade go by in Greater Cincinnati on an ordinary day. Could you read for us, Terry, from your report?
Sure, Tom. One man walks toward the glass doors at the clinic's entrance with a sleeping baby on his shoulder and a girl in pajamas at his side. Two women with little boys follow a few minutes later, then a man in a business suit and a woman in a waitress uniform and a young man walking his dog, and five pregnant jail inmates in orange and white stripes shuffling single file from a van to the entrance, wrists shackled, hands resting on their bellies.
Terry DeMeo reading from 7 Days of Heroin, the epic report that she and Dan Horn wrote up off the work of 60 journalists around Cincinnati, Ohio. And Terry, I am looking at a photograph of these pregnant inmates headed into the Northern Kentucky Med Clinic, as you say, handcuffed, striped prison suits, and all of them headed in for methadone. Just one image, photographic and in text after another here, that kind of blows the mind. What is going on or has been going on in Cincinnati? I mean, we shouldn't be shocked. And yet when you lay it all out, it is still shocking, Terry. What has created this?
Well, you know, it started with, just like everywhere, with the prescription pills. We had a severe prescription pill addiction problem and overdose rate. And a good thing agreed upon thing that medical professionals and governments did was to crack down on pill mills and the availability of these prescription opioids. It was kind of a sitting target for people who, with Mexican cartels who came in with heroin, which you could buy very cheap on the streets, and people turned from one addiction to the other.
And here you have now, how does it rank among Ohio cities or among cities nationally? Ohio and Cincinnati, where do they stand in the lineup of pain and problem here, Terry?
Well, according to the CDC, Ohio and Kentucky have among the top five highest rates of death due to drug overdose. And that's about almost 30 per 100,000. But you have to keep in mind that the CDC's latest report was from 2015. Here in Hamilton County, we had 342 such overdose deaths last year, and we're on pace to, go beyond that. Northern Kentucky is similar. It's just a tiny state, and the overdoses just keep going up.
Here's another just a little bit of sound from 7 days of heroin. This is July. Paramedics found a woman named Grace on the floor of a flop house in Covington, Kentucky. Here they were administering the overdose reversing drug Narcan and setting up an IV as she stirred awake.
Gracie. Gracie. There we go. Gracie.
Hey.
Watch yourself. Watch yourself. You got an IV in your arm, okay?
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from ZipRecruiter, who understands when you run a business, you've got important decisions to make every day, like hiring. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality candidates simple. With one click at ZipRecruiter.com/OP, you can post your job to 100 leading job sites across the web and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to hire. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking this hour about a powerful new look at the American opioid crisis, the Cincinnati Inquirer sent out 60 journalists for 1 week this summer to look at the depth of the crisis around their city. They brought back an incredible report. It is headlined 7 Days of Heroin. Its co-writers are with us today, Terry DeMio and Dan Horn from the Cincinnati Inquirer, joining us from Cincinnati, and you can join us as well. Do you recognize the kind of scenes we're hearing here out of Cincinnati? Could this be your town? Is it? Same issue, same woe. Are we still in denial about just how bad, how ugly, how hard the opioid heroin crisis is, or are you way past denial? Are you, your family, your town living this? All kinds of moments as they blanketed the city and beyond for their 7 days of reporting. Daryl Breeden created something called Firehouse Ministries in Butler, Kentucky, across the Ohio River from Cincinnati to help fight the heroin crisis, create a welcoming space for people struggling with addiction. Here he was.
And when I hear him talk, it's like it's a demon that's got him. You know, that it's something inside of them that's really evil that's forcing them to do what they're doing.
But it's not isolated. It's all over the place. Deputies in Claremont County, Ohio, pulling over here a 23-year-old man in July, finding drug paraphernalia in his car. Man said he was a heroin user but felt safe taking the drug because he snorted it rather than using a needle. Here he was during the arrest talking with one of the Cincinnati Inquirer's reporters.
I just think that it's a lot safer than just sticking a needle in my arm.
So you're not doing it every day?
Sometimes yes.
Sometimes yes?
I don't know if that makes sense, but other times no.
Okay, and here's Stephanie Gaffney talking. Used heroin for years, quit after she became pregnant with her daughter, Eliana. At the time of this recording in July, she was living with 8-month-old Eliana at a treatment center in Cincinnati. Here she was at a doctor's appointment talking with the Cincinnati Inquirer, describing what she wanted for her 8-month-old daughter.
She gives me something a little bit more worth fighting for. I had a rough and complicated childhood. I don't want her to have to go through any of that I did.
Stephanie Gaffney ended up on heroin. Let me read how this was ultimately written up in the 7 Days of Heroin report. Gaffney, 28, quit cold turkey after learning she was pregnant. She's living now with the baby at First Step Home, a treatment center in Walnut Hills. They plan to move into an apartment together soon. After years of addiction, Gaffney's goals are modest. She wants to raise her child in a normal home. She wants a normal life. The doctor finishes the examination. She looks real, real good, the doctor says. Gaffney is relieved. She scoops Eliana into her arms and takes her appointment card for her next visit to the clinic in December. See you then, she says. Then, as the Inquirer reports, 10 days later, this young mother, Gaffney, with an 8-month-old child, is dead from a heroin overdose. Terry DeMio and Dan Horn are with us from Cincinnati. Terry, I mean, you've been reporting this for a while, so you must be hardened to it, but reading it, it's just overwhelming. Vignette after vignette after vignette, it just seems like an unending parade of utter woe.
It does. And, you know, you can't get hardened to it. You kind of operate as the journalist and stay who you are. But I had told this huge staff of ours, this very good staff of ours who were willing to go out, that because there would be time, obviously, before this published, we needed to check on everyone that we talked to, if possible. And, you know, I let them know that just because somebody is in recovery doesn't mean that she or he may not relapse and may not die. So in Stephanie Gaffney's case, terribly unfortunately, that did occur.
Dan, could you read a little bit from us? This is Kim Hill, who we heard a little bit from earlier, but there's a scene from day one of your reporting where she races to Newport, Kentucky, where her son has died of a heroin overdose. Could you read for us, Dan, from your report?
Sure, sure. Her son had just moved into an apartment a few months earlier, so this is her outside. Kim Hill watches the paramedics carry a body bag out the front door of her son's apartment and down the concrete steps to the sidewalk. The body is heavy. One of the paramedics loses his grip. Kim can tell the body inside is hunched over and stiff, as if he'd been dead for hours before anyone found him, as if he were still face down on his bed, alone for God knows how long, a needle in his arm. Kim screams at them. "That's my child," she says. "He is not a piece of garbage."
7 days. "That's my child, not a piece of garbage." She can see the body hunched over in the bag. That is her son. Here's another day, just a moment of the many moments the Inquirer captures. The 35-year-old woman in a blue tank top and yoga pants collapses on the floor of the public restroom at Findlay Market. A syringe loaded with heroin is at her side when a shopper pushes open the door and finds her struggling to breathe. Police and medics are called, but a woman at the market takes action first. She has naloxone packs in her purse, and this civilian administers the drugs before medics arrive. The woman regains consciousness. Medics take her to the hospital, and another moment has passed in the heroin life of this single week in Cincinnati. 7 Days of Heroin is the report of the Cincinnati Inquirer, and it is incredible. Reminds me of sort of Dylan Thomas with Under Milk Wood, but it's nothing wonderful about it. Alex in Knoxville, Tennessee. Alex, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Dan Horn and Terry DeMio.
Hi, Tom. Hi, guys. Hi. Interesting topic. It's really close to home for me. I'm from a small town in New Jersey originally called Keensburg, and I've lost like 10 people, 10 friends this year alone to overdoses. And it all started with pain pills, and then it progressed, and then it turns to heroin, which, you know, is maddening to see this happen to these people I've been so close with my whole life.
And are you seeing people go down? Are you losing people to this, Alex?
Yeah. Ten close friends have died overdosed this year.
10 in a single year. Are you surprised at that number, Dan, Terry?
Unfortunately, no. You know, I think that's one of the things about this week that we chose that is most remarkable about what we found was that this really was just a very typical week. And in that week, we were able to confirm 180 overdoses, which is a low number, we know, but that's what we could confirm, and 18 dead. And, you know, if, you know, we were talking about gun violence or something like that, and we had 180 people shot and 18 shot to death in 1 week, you know, there'd be an outcry. But this has become so routine and so familiar that, you know, because it's heroin, it's just greeted with a shrug by most people. And unfortunately, you know, it's still pretty terrible. Just because it's routine doesn't mean it's not awful.
and it's taking people down terrible roads. Terry, you describe a scene from Over the Rhine. It's a Cincinnati neighborhood known for its history of crime, and there's a heroin-addicted prostitute there walking along McMicken Avenue looking for a client, wants the money to buy fentanyl, synthetic opiate, more powerful, much more than heroin. Could you read for us a little about Ali's situation there, Terry?
Yes. Ali already has changed her dress today. She's wearing a metallic studded purple mini dress. She knows that sometimes her customers want someone pretty. Other times, it doesn't seem to matter. She runs a hand through her long, thick hair, grasps it and lifts it from her shoulders before letting it fall back down. Then she does it again. She's getting anxious. Withdrawal symptoms are starting to set in, and Ali thinks she might vomit on the sidewalk if she doesn't get a fix. Ali darts across the street, vanishes for a few minutes, and returns with her drug in her hand. She hides behind a couple of trash cans and uses it. About 15 minutes later, she's back, feeling better, walking the street in the hot summer sun.
Glimpse after glimpse after glimpse there, turning tricks for heroin, and it is not a good road. Mindy in Ohio, Alliance, Ohio. Mindy, you're on with Terry and Dan. Thank you for calling, Mindy.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm a mom of a heroin addict in recovery. And, you know, of course, these stories are just absolutely tragic. But the thing that I have learned over the 20 or so years I've been the mom of an addict is our country has just got to make a huge change in the way we look at this issue and recognize that there is clear evidence that addiction is a disease, that we have so stigmatized and vilified these individuals as being bad, evil people, when in fact that the symptom in the disease model of addiction is badness, is doing these insane things. And until we embrace, and the evidence is so clear, we embrace that this is a disease that affects the midbrain. It bypasses an individual's ability to make any kind of rational decisions. Until we embrace this and stop incarcerating our way out of this situation, we are not going to get anywhere. And this is why you're going to continue to have these shows where there's these just horrifying reports. So the evidence is clear, and education is so paramount. And I guess I'm just stunned that more of this has it. I have worked so hard to try to understand this disease. I'm just stunned that there is not more information out there for people and public to embrace and to understand the deep nature of this horrific disease.
Mindy, and you've been the mother of a heroin addict, so you know what you're talking about, and we hear that, and I'll put it to Terry and Dan, but let me ask you, because we've got people listening to all of this, and, you know, looking at all the reporting that's come out over the last years as this has spread into communities that didn't have this problem so much before, and here's one who says, why is the opioid epidemic a national tragedy, but the crack epidemic was a law and order problem. Many people are commenting on this, Mindy, saying, you know, now that it's sort of in white communities taking people down, we're looking at it so empathetically, we were told to see it as a national tragedy. Before it was lock them up, lock them up. How do you respond to that, Mindy?
Well, I can see that, and obviously, I mean, it is no accident that because it's hit a upper middle class like our family that, you know, all of a sudden it comes to the forefront, but nevertheless, all substances that are abused affect a certain area of the brain. This research is clear and evident. And that, again, now we have the tools and the ability to address this in a sane way and to see it as the medical issue that it is and not just evil, bad people doing bad things to themselves and their loved ones.
Mindy, we've got it, and we wish the very best to your family there. Terry, Dan, in your reporting, in the 7 days of heroin, Do you see people looking at users as bad, evil people, as Mindy says? How is the Cincinnati population taking on board the population in their midst who are addicted and in trouble?
We have definitely seen some people who still do not understand the disease nature of this epidemic. We have more and more people who are understanding. There is more empathy, there is less stigma, but we have a long way to go. I talked with one police chief of a small city in northern Kentucky a couple of years ago who was not going to have his officers carry Narcan. He was opposed to it. And then several months ago, he contacted me and told me that his department has an angel program, which means that not only are the officers carrying Narcan, but there was a social worker hired who's very, very much understands addiction disease. And anybody can walk in and say, I need help. And if they have heroin with them, fentanyl, any other drugs, these people will not be charged, and they will be funneled into treatment centers.
This is a war. You're quoting one of those your reporters found in this piece. There are casualties. We're looking at 7 days of heroin in Cincinnati, Ohio. But you also have tape in this presentation of Richard Jones, sheriff of Butler County, Ohio, sheriff in Southwest Ohio, whose department, the only one there, does not let its deputies use Narcan, which reverses opioid overdose. I want you to explain this to us. But here he was in July speaking with reporters on the 7 Days of Heroin project to explain that decision. Here's the sheriff.
Kids are born in my jail. 3 babies born in 18 months, born addicted. 12 pregnant ladies in my jail and have 35 babies. One of them has 7. They don't have any of them. Children's Services has them. Narcan isn't the issue. The issue is the people that are dying and are doing these drugs, and our politicians and our government does nothing. But I'm not apologizing for my stance, not even this much, and nor will I.
Dan Horn, what is he saying there? They don't administer Narcan because the world is better off if these people die?
Yeah, as you can probably tell, Sheriff Jones is not a shy man. He expresses himself pretty clearly and often, and he's got some pretty strong opinions. And he, you know, his position, his stated position, is that he thinks it's a safety concern for his deputies, and they should not be administering any kind of medicine to anyone, regardless of whether that medicine might save a life in just a matter of minutes. You know, I think what this gets at, too, though, is a point you raised earlier about the way people perceive this crisis and the crack epidemic before it. And, you know, people get pretty set in their ways in terms of, you know, personal responsibility versus, you know, the role of society to try to help these folks. And I think this is part of a broader debate over, you know, what role society should have in trying to help people get through this addiction. And it's easy to dismiss them, I think. It's easy for folks to say they should just stop using it. I think most of us who've covered this, and certainly the families who've dealt with it, understand it's a lot tougher than that, though.
Boy, you bring these moments to us that just drive it home. Here's a piece from the series, just a little bit. Casey Rolfe walks into the conference room in a psychiatric hospital, takes a seat across from a 7-year-old girl. The girl is wearing pink shorts and a bright blue T-shirt that reads, "I'm a dream believer." "Do you know why you're in this situation?" Rolfe asks. "Because my mom and dad did drugs," the girl says in the Cincinnati Inquirer report. Rolfe is a Hamilton County social worker. She made the 5-hour drive today to the Belmont Pines Psychiatric Hospital in Youngstown to check on the girl, who suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder and other psychiatric problems. The girl is from Coleraine Township, but she hasn't been home since she found her mother slumped over the toilet last year, high on heroin and barely conscious. Her father died of an overdose earlier this year. Children's Services placed the girl with a foster family, but that ended when she tried to drown her foster sister in a YMCA swimming pool. After that, the girl's doctor sent her here for more intensive treatment. I mean, Terry, the people paying the price for this are those who die, those who suffer, and the children. The stories of the children in this series of reports just knocked me down, Terry.
Yeah, we are seeing more and more children who, you know, of course, who are finding their parents overdosed, who can't live with their parents any longer, whose parents die. And, you know, these children with parents who are in active addiction have to get help. They will live with grandmothers and aunts and uncles if they can. Often they are taken into foster care.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking this hour about a powerful new look at the American opioid crisis. The Cincinnati Inquirer sent out 60 journalists for a solid week to look at the depth of the crisis around their city. They brought back incredible stories, an incredible report, 7 days of heroin. Its co-writers, Terry DeMio and Dan Horn, are with us from Cincinnati. You can join us. What do you hear in these stories? Are we really nationally awakened to the scale and severity of this? And what do we need to do to turn the tide? Do you recognize this? Our listeners certainly do. They're writing in. Maureen says, this is my town. The Rust Belt prospects for most people are non-existent. And it says, my suburban rural community has been seeing this for about 5 years now. It is sadly becoming routine. Here from 7 days of heroin at Dorman Products. This is an auto parts store, big employer in Warsaw, Kentucky, across the Ohio River from Cincinnati. Employees meet weekly during work hours to talk about their struggles with addiction or what their families are going through. Here's one worker who was talking with the Cincinnati Inquirer, whose two sons are addicted to heroin, describing the support she felt from the company.
Most of the time, it's an escape. You're hunting for the parts and you don't really have a lot of time to think. That's the hardest part, is putting your game face on and trying to pretend like you're okay. You know, in here, I don't have to do that. A lot of the guys that were in here will come up to me on the floor and ask me, how are your boys doing? Have you heard from Josh yet? And that means a lot.
180 overdoses in this week in the greater Cincinnati area. 18 deaths just in this week. Babies born addicted. Terry DeMio and Dan Horn have written it all up for the Cincinnati Inquirer. And despite everything we know about this, this is turning heads all across the country. We invited U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio to join us for his thoughts on what Cincinnati and his state are seeing, what the country is grappling with. And he's with us right now from Washington. Senator Brown, Sherrod Brown, thank you very much for being with us.
Tom, good to be with you. Thank you so much for doing this. And if I could just interject for 1 second to thank Dan and Terry. I know they teach in journalism school and seminary both to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. And they're both as professional journalists doing that. And it's welcome for all of us that they've stood up and written what they've done. So I just wanted to start by saying thank you.
This is all not brand new. You would think by now, Senator Brown, that we'd all feel and be aware of this. Yet when you read it in the Inquirer, with the power of these stories, it just knocked me down. Are we at grips? Does it take this kind of report to bring us to grips with what's actually going on all around us?
Apparently. I mean, there's a book that came out a couple of years ago called Dreamland that documented a lot of what happened in Ohio, around the country also, but Ohio, unfortunately, was front and center. We lead the nation, if that's the right word. And the number of overdose deaths. Not a day goes by without someone in Ohio experience, someone's family member, husband, daughter, father, whatever. We still are not combating this the way that we should. It takes good journalism like this to get it in front of us. So policymakers do the right thing. I mean, it's prevention, it's education, it's medication assisted therapy, it's trying to keep some of these drugs out of the country, although you never can arrest your way out of this. Whenever I hold a roundtable, and I've done it for several years now around Ohio, and when you talk about addiction, somebody always has a story to tell. Tears come to eyes. People tell the story of an addicted sister they have, or a child, or a 17-year-old. I mean, it's just, it breaks people's hearts, and it's the biggest public health crisis of our lives in this state and in this country.
I mean, we know that overuse of prescription opioids got a lot of people, many people, and continues to on this path. We know that there's a lot of heroin coming in across the border, and yet what we see here is a population that seems stunningly vulnerable to this. Sherrod Brown, Senator Brown, why? What's going on in our culture, our economy in Ohio that has made people less resistant and more vulnerable to exactly this scourge?
Well, I think that Dan and Terry answer that better than I, but it's a number of things. It's a hopelessness in communities that have seen a devastation in terms of lost good paying union jobs. I grew up in Mansfield, Ohio. The journalists have written a lot, especially about Southern Ohio, where when a plant closes, sometimes both husband and wife lose jobs because they both work there and the family income's wiped out. It's doctors over-prescribing OxyContin, oxycodone, Percocet. It's people that go in and they work with their hands and their backs and their shoulders and their arms and their legs, and they have pain, and rather than, you know, taking ibuprofen, the doctors prescribe pain relief medication that had it's morphine based without the understanding, a lot of doctors and a lot of patients in the end, because their doctors don't help them with this enough, not understanding that this stuff is highly addictive. Administered in the hospital, it's not particularly addictive, but if it's not, and people get a 2 week or a month of OxyContin, the chance of addiction are so much higher. It's not having enough facilities. The federal government, state government have let us down by not providing the dollars to scale up treatment centers. Partly we don't have enough trained people. Nobody saw this coming to this degree, but partly that state and federal government would rather do tax cuts for rich people than investing in Chillicothe and Portsmouth and Dayton and Mansfield and Cleveland and helping people with treatment. It's all of that. And on top of that, then you had Congress trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act, where 200 in our state alone, Tom, in our state alone, in Ohio, 200,000 people are getting treatment for opioid addiction who have insurance because of the Affordable Care Act. And a bunch of politicians in Washington that get their health insurance paid for by government, we're going to pull it away from them. And many of these people are employed in low-wage jobs. I mean, it's just this hypocrisy and this inertia and this indifference by far too many policymakers are a big contributor to this problem.
Senator Brown, about a month ago, we saw President Trump. We had the Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price saying we don't need a national emergency. But President Trump said, no, we do. There is one. It's on. But that's never been formally, that hasn't been formalized. I mean, he said it on the, I think it was on the porch of his golf resort there. But where does that stand? Do we have it? You've written a letter to the president I'm reading here saying, come on, what's happening? Where do we stand on the national emergency and what difference would it make?
Well, it makes a difference. I mean, you've got a Secretary of Health and Human Services that wants to raise the eligibility age for Medicare. Answer it this way. Lincoln once said, when his staff wanted him to stay in the White House and win the war and free the slaves and preserve the Union, he said, no, I got to get my public opinion bath and get out and listen to people and hear their concerns. Pope Francis, soon after assuming the papacy, said, admonish his parish priest to go out and smell like the flock. Secretary Price clearly doesn't get out talking to real people about real problems in addiction if he thinks this isn't a public health emergency in this country. The president has not really either not heard or not been willing to follow his own words and go out and really address this and bring attention that only a president with that loud microphone can bring, and bring the resources, and I'm not just talking dollars, but the resources of the federal government to bear on this problem. Again, it takes its prevention, its education, its treatment, it's keeping things out as much as you can at the border. I want the president to come to Ohio and see the epidemic firsthand. I want him to sit, instead of calling names in New Hampshire, calling it a drug-infested den, whatever he said, to sit with people who have been addicted, who are addicted, whose families have suffered. The families suffer almost as much as the addict, and listen to them and look in their eyes and stay quiet for an hour and listen to what they mean, really, really drink in what these families are saying. I mean, there are few things more tragic than seeing a father talk about his daughter who has been in and out of treatment for 10 years and what it's done to the family and what he thinks the future is for his daughter.
A good first step might be diving into this Cincinnati Inquirer report. It's pretty incredible. 7 days of heroin. U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio has joined us from Washington. Senator Brown, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks. Dan and Terry, thank you. And Tom, thanks for doing the interview on such an important issue.
Terry DeMio and Dan Horn. Senator Brown, thank you very much. And Dan Horn with us from the Inquirer, co-writers on top of the work of dozens of journalists who fanned out to bring back moments like this one. This is Lizzie Hamblin, her son Scotty, struggles with heroin addiction. This was Lizzie in July showing Inquirer reporters her home in Crescent Springs, Kentucky, about 8 miles from Cincinnati. This is just days after her addicted son had gone missing.
This is my room. I keep it locked. I keep my purse and my personal things in there. When Scotty's using, he tends to take things. Leather jackets, brand new pants, trade them in, get money, and get high. We hit our up and downs, but we had a lot of good times.
When Scotty's using, he tends to take things. She was suspected that her missing son was using heroin again, that he would come home maybe when he stopped. Here she was in July describing her wish for her son to stop.
if I could lock him to a bed with the chain, and I would.
Jason in Evansville, Indiana. Jason, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Dan Horn and Terry DeMeo.
Hey, Dan. I have a friend that he has lost two sons with not even a year in their 20s to a heroin overdose.
Yeah.
One of them was on his way to treatment, and from what I understand, picked up some at the bus stop and went back to the hotel room and overdosed and passed away. And I heard one of your callers saying something about crack use and being a lower income, and it's everybody that's using this, and that's true. But the crack, I don't believe, was killing the people like this heroin is every week, every day. And it's like crazy in Evansville. People just die, and a lot of young people, lots and lots of young people. And like they're getting arrested. They're not helping them. And they need to, instead of treating them like criminals, treat them like patients and help them try to help themselves. Because it's a very strong, it takes you over. You know, it's a very strong thing.
Yeah, we hear it. And Jason, I appreciate your call there from Indiana, from Evansville. We've been looking at the Cincinnati area, but you could take this template and probably set it down over lots of communities around this country now and come up with stories like this. The Cincinnati Enquirer has done it, and it is powerful. Terry, Dan, within your community, I mean, the whole country is paying attention to this and reading this, but within the greater Cincinnati area, how is this landing? How are people responding? Is there a, okay, now what reaction or what, Terry?
We've had an overwhelming response from people. It was great to hear from families, parents, and even people who are either in recent recovery or still using, that they felt that we represented their lives as they are. And we did have, I'm going to throw this to Dan because he went to a press conference yesterday in the city of Cincinnati, mm-hmm. and there was something done yesterday.
Dan, what there?
Well, a number of politicians had gotten together and announced that they're going to spend about $500,000 more on some shorter-term efforts and longer-term efforts to curb addiction. They're going to create more quick response teams. They're going to try to buy more Narcan and provide that to not just first responders, but also to the public, and provide the training that goes with that. So when people are out in the community, as we found in a couple of cases here, and they come across someone who had overdosed, they can actually do something about it instead of just waiting for 911 to arrive. You know, that's not a lot of money in the scheme of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this may require a bigger lift. And I think part of the struggle that a lot of the first responders and jails and clinics are having is that they just don't have the resources to deal with what they're seeing every day. You know, I was struck by the last caller talking about how pervasive this is. You know, 2 years ago, Terry and I were working on a different story about heroin, and I met a young woman in jail. And she was in her late 20s, had three children. She'd lost to foster care. She'd almost died from a MRSA infection. And here she was being arrested for probably the seventh or eighth time. And I asked her, you know, what are you going to do when you get out this afternoon? And without missing a beat, she said, I'm going to get high. And, you know, the people in those situations, they need help and resources that aren't necessarily available. At that time, that jail did not have those resources. They're working on it. But that's where those people are. And right now, a lot of those resources aren't where they are.
We've got people calling in from across the country, New York and New Orleans and right here in Massachusetts, saying, and well beyond, saying, yes, this is a story we know. Yes, we're dealing with this every day. You've got story after story here. Derek and Ricky pulled over in their car. And they were admitted they had been shooting up heroin in the vehicle, their 3-year-old daughter in the car at the time. They were 26 and 25 years old, but not just young. Claremont County, quick response team pulls up to the little ranch house. A couple in their 60s overdosed the night before. They give the couple Naloxone, Narcan, and they survive. On it goes. You take us into the Firehouse Ministries, and you've got Michael Cummins there. A year ago yesterday, he says, I lost my 30-year-old son to heroin. And you report many of the 60 or so people who come for evening services in Butler, Kentucky, nod their heads. For 15 years, he struggled. The music begins to play again there. People raise their hands and sing, some bright morning, when this life is over, I'll fly away to that home on God's celestial shore. I'll fly away. There's a spiritual crisis here right alongside everything else. Is the way that moment made me see and feel this, Terry?
Yes, you're right. The good news is that many involved in our faith-based organizations have come forward to help and have a clearer understanding of addiction than what they would have had they not come together with heroin coalitions for communities and learn from experts, you know, certified addiction experts, what this is and what it does to their brains.
18 deaths in the 1 week the Cincinnati Inquirer covered in this report, suspected or known to be from overdose. 180 overdoses reported to hospitals in the Cincinnati region, underestimating that number probably. It only includes those that required hospital treatment. And right on down, the numbers are fierce. The stories are compelling. Terry DeMio at the Cincinnati Inquirer, thank you very much for this work and for bringing and sharing it with us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom.
Dan Horn at the Cincinnati Inquirer, thank you, co-writer on 7 Days of Heroin. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Tom.
Good luck to Cincinnati and communities all across this country struggling with exactly this scourge. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.